Does DNA somehow prove evolution? We're going to talk about that right now in this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Stephen Meyer, author of the best-selling book, Darwin's Doubt, plus some other books such as Signature in the Cell. Dr. Meyer, welcome back to the program, and it's been a while.
It's been a while, but it's always great to be with you, Jerry.
Yes, likewise. So I want to ask you, is DNA somehow, does it prove evolution? In fact, I'd like to read parts of an email I received, a negative one, against one of the pieces I had written, basically saying that, look, if you talk about evolution in terms of small changes within kind, fine, there's plenty of evidence for that. But if by evolution you mean extrapolating from that to what we could call macroevolution, evolution on the big scale, where, you know, one creature evolves into another creature, etc., and that's really what people mean by evolution, then I don't see the evidence for that. But here's what he wrote back in reference to DNA and evolution. Our modern and ancient human DNA shows absolute and conclusive evidence that humans branched off a common species that includes chimps and bonobos. I don't know what that is.
About
6 to 7 million years ago. The fact that our DNA shows 98% similarity to both should set off alarms for critical thinking. Christian apologist sites refute the evidence, but it's dishonesty at its finest. Just because evidence doesn't support your beliefs doesn't mean you can call it a hoax and dismiss it as untrue. So for the next 15 minutes, let's unpack all this, please.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Unfortunately, your correspondent is himself not up to date on the most current scientific evidence. That 99 or 98% similarity figure was determined on the basis of what are called sequence comparisons between similar genes in humans and chimps. For example, the genes that are that code for making proteins called hemoglobin molecules are often compared. Hemoglobin is a protein that captures molecular oxygen in the bloodstream. The problem with those early studies is that they have massively overestimated the similarity between chimp and human DNA for several reasons. First, they didn't take into account the sections of the genomes that are that were then considered to be junk, non-functional. And we have learned since those studies were performed, that there are vast reaches of the genome that do not code for proteins, therefore they were previously thought to be junk, but which do turn out to have very important functions in the different organisms. So if you exclude from consideration those, and about 97% of the genome doesn't code for proteins, it does something else. So people just excluded that from their comparisons, and their numerical estimates, their quantitative estimates of similarity were skewed as a result of those premature exclusions in the comparisons that were conducted.
Okay, so in plain English, what would it be then? What are the similarities, say, between chimps and humans as far as DNA?
Well, here's the interesting thing, is that those non-coding regions have been found to be importantly functional. Overall, they're functioning much like an operating system in a computer, which is controlling the timing of the expression of the data files. In this case, it's the non-coding regions are regulating the timing and expression of the genes that do code for proteins. And here's been the extraordinary discovery. Those non-coding regions, the 97% or more of the genome, which are functioning as an operating system, are in the parlance of the specialists, species-specific. They're completely different in chimps and humans. And so the previous argument was high degrees of similarity point to common ancestry.
Okay.
But what now do we make of significant degrees, very significant degrees of difference in the operating systems that control the overall expression of the genetic information that's used to build those proteins? That suggests perhaps separate ancestry. And certainly it lowers the overall quantitative estimate of similarity. And yet there's another factor beyond that, which I can discuss as well.
Well, okay, I'm beginning to feel like a bonobo. Would you mind, whatever that is, would you mind backing up and explain to us, what do you mean by coding in the first place?
Okay, so DNA is a molecule that contains digital information. The DNA has the famous double helix structure.
Sure.
And on the inside, interior of the molecule, there are four chemical subunits that run up and down the spine of the DNA in various sequences. And these four chemical subunits function like alphabetic characters in a written language or digital characters like zeros and ones in a section of machine code. And this was part of the famed discovery of first Watson and Crick in 1953, and then Francis Crick a few years later in 1957 actually proposed something called the sequence hypothesis, in which he realized that these subunits of the molecule were functioning like letters in a written text. And so what we know DNA does then is that it provides the instructions for building or code. It encodes instructions for building proteins. And proteins are the important molecules inside cells, large molecules that perform all the important jobs. They process information, they build the parts of miniature machines, and they catalyze at very rapid rates important biochemical reactions that are part of our metabolism and so forth. So the proteins are the workhorses in the cell. And the information inside the DNA molecule, inscribed along the spine of the DNA in a digital form, an alphabetic form or a typographic form, however you want to think about it, that information codes or provides the instructions for building those workhorse molecules, the proteins. So previously, these comparisons had been done on those parts of the genome, the parts of the big stretches of DNA you could think of as with lots of genes, and then what was discovered was that in addition to the genes, each gene codes for a protein, there are big stretches of the DNA that don't seem to code for proteins. And previously the Darwinians thought, okay, that's the evidence of the random trial and error, random mutation, natural selection, trial and error process. All of that's the detritus, the leftovers of that trial and error process.
What they used to call like vestigial organs, that kind of thing.
Well, not quite a vestigial organ, but it would be a vestige
along that line
of the trial and error process.
Okay,
Of it that way. All right. So it's the junk was thought to be proof that random mutation and natural selection had been the mechanism that had generated all the coding parts of the DNA, which are functional, and the non-coding parts, which were the failed experiments. But what's been discovered is that those non-coding parts are importantly functional,
mm-hmm.
And that they have, there's a kind of informational hierarchy in the DNA where you have modules that have the information for building the proteins, but you have other stretches of the DNA that function, again, like an operating system in a computer, which basically tells the cell when to turn on and when to turn off the expression of those different genes in response to the cell's needs. So it's the determination that all that was junk was premature, and then the comparisons that were made of, say, chimp and human DNA were made only on the basis of what was thought to be the functional parts, the coding regions, mm-hmm. of the genome.
Okay.
But if you exclude 97% of the genome from your comparison, and those parts turn out to be both A, functional, and B, different in different species, then you're going to get a skewed number, and that's what happened.
Plus, it's my understanding that even if the 97% number was accurate, and you're saying, no, it is not, because it's not taken into consideration this factor you've just described at great length, another thing to consider is the fact that even if it were just the 3% different, you're still talking about millions and millions of differences represented just in that 3%. So it's
well, yeah, you've
just
got 3 billion base pairs in the human human genome. So the two, if it's 98% similar, 2% of 3 billion is still a lot of genetic information. But here's another aspect of this.
Wow. By the way, let me just interrupt you real fast. This is Stephen Meyer we're talking with. Dr. Stephen Meyer earned his PhD in the study of science at Cambridge University, and he's a senior fellow with Discovery Institute, discovery.org, for more information. Go ahead, sir.
Well, right. There's another amazing recent discovery, and that is that across many what are called taxa, many different classifications of plants and animals, geneticists are discovering something called orphan genes. And orphan genes are genes that are, the term of art is taxonomically restricted. They occur only in, say, chimps, or only in humans, or only in bonobos, or only in a given plant or animal of species of whatever kind.
Orphan genes.
Now,
okay.
The Darwinian way of analyzing the genome has always been to look for similarities and point and say, hey, these similarities provide evidence of common ancestry. It's an old argument. It's called the argument from homology.
Okay.
Darwin used it analyzing similar anatomical features. In modern times, biologists have done similar comparisons of gene sequences and said the more similar two genes are in two different species, the more recently they diverge from each other in the evolutionary process on that tree of life. So that's partly what's going on with this 98% similarity. Since the similarities are so high, the divergence time is thought to be fairly recent in the evolutionary time scale. But what another thing that's being discovered is that there are many genes. They're nearly now ubiquitous in across the phylogenetic landscape, or the across the different species. We're finding in species after species these genes that have no discernible similarity to genes in any other known organism. They don't, and so they give no evidence of having evolved from some other gene.
Oh, so in other words, the orphan genes, in a sense, demonstrate that there was no common ancestry.
They suggest discontinuity in the Darwinian tree of life, which is to say a big gap. And some scientists...
So those links are missing, too.
Yeah, well, in a sense, you have fossil missing links, and the orphans are now suggesting a kind of genetic missing link.
Wow, and you mentioned that in Darwin's Doubt, don't you?
Yeah, I discuss orphan genes. I also discuss this method of comparing sequence similarity and using that as a way of projecting back to where the common ancestor of two, the alleged common ancestor of two different, for example, animals. I was concerned with the origin of animals in my book about the Cambrian explosion, Darwin's Doubt. And one other, yet a third problem, in addition to orphans, is the problem that depending on which genes and proteins you decide to compare in two different species of animal, you'll get very different divergence times and very different pictures of the tree of life. And this is a problem because if their history only happened once, there should be only one tree of life. And that you get conflicting trees depending on which things you decide to compare suggests that maybe this isn't a reliable methodology at all, and we can't discern anything about the history of life, at least on a large scale, from these sequence comparisons. That they're not, in fact, if something was produced by common design, you would expect these kind of conflicting trees. If we compare different styles of automobile design, we can focus on different features and we'll get conflicting trees in just the same way.
10 seconds
left. We know
left.
The automobiles didn't evolve from a common ancestor. They were produced by different designers who mixed and matched the modules to get unique mosaics of functional features. And so, anyway, there's a number of problems with this 98% figure that your listener wrote
sure.
to you about.
All right.
And,
so we're basically out of time, but it sounds like the short answer is no. Evolution is not proven by DNA. More information is available at the book Darwin's Doubt. Is that website Darwin's Doubt?
Darwin'sDoubt.com, lots of animations, okay, debates, and fun things for people to view that will help them get into this debate if they're interested.
Dr. Stephen Meyer, always a pleasure. Darwin'sDoubt.com for more information. Thank you, sir. God bless you.
You bet. Okay.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.